Thank you for your kind words, and thank you all for coming. The topic of my talk is statistical modeling of a recurrent but rare event. First of all, I would like to thank my co-authors and who have contributed immensely to this project and made this successful. I have nothing to disclose as a presenter. And this study was based on a contract that Arbor Research had with CMS, or Center of Medicaid and Medicare Services, to develop some quality measures for dialysis patients. The outline of my talk will be, first I'll walk you through some background and motivation, and then we'll dive directly into the statistical methodology to estimate the center effects and how to identify outlying centers. And then we will see how the methodology that we developed or we talk about here can be applied for red blood cell transfusions in dialysis patients. And then summary and concluding remarks will end this presentation. So statistical evaluation of healthcare provider performance has become a very increasingly important component of healthcare research. Why? Because the facilities themselves need a yardstick to evaluate their own performance. Secondly, it helps the policymakers and the taxpayers to identify and address facilities that are not performing that well or substandard performance. And also it has been shown that if recent outcomes are predictive of future outcomes, then some kind of intervention might help to monitor the quality of care provided. Not only this, the public reporting of this performance has become increasingly common. So we have dialysis facility compare site and different sites where flagging of exceptional providers are done. So when we are flagging some providers or when we are seeing that some facilities are not doing well or doing exceptionally well, we need some statistically valid and reliable measures to do so. So that we, because it is important is because the difference in the outcomes can be because of two things. One, because of the difference in the patients that are being treated at different facilities. Each facility will not have the same case mix. Second is because of the actual difference in the quality of care provided at the facility level. So when we are accounting for those differences in outcomes, we have to make sure that we account for the variation that is there because of the patient differences, and we assess the outcomes at the provider level only. So what's our applied motivation? Well, sample size was not a problem for us. We had large number of dialysis patients of the order of 400,000 and 6,000 facilities to deal with. And transfusions as an aspect of anemia management indicates poor quality of care. And God forbid, not all of us get transfused, so it's a rare event, but it's a recurrent event for those who get transfused. So it's very common to have multiple transfusions. And there exist unmeasured event rate predictors. So let's look into the statistical methodology. So the major intention of this talk is to identify the provider effects or to estimate the provider effects, and I will be interchanging provider, center, and facility at the same time, but they all mean the same for this talk. So how do we do that? The measure of interest to calculate is done by a ratio of two numbers, where the numerator is the observed number of events, it's the actual number of events. The denominator, the expected, is the number of events that would come from a predictive rate model after accounting for the differences in the patient characteristics. So there is nothing to do for the observed because you just sum up the number of events, so it's easy to calculate. How do we model the expected events? The denominator actually stems from a proportional rates model, and this is the recurrent event analog of our well-known PH or proportional hazards Cox model. Now, how do we do this? There are two ways of doing it. Like we can create dummy variables or categorical variables for all the dialysis providers or all the providers that we have. But as I showed before, we have 6,000 providers. So you don't want to create 6,000 categorical variables that would make it a little difficult to implement. Second thing is that since we are doing recurrent event analog, I'll give a simple example. Suppose your event of interest was number of days hospitalized, and one person is hospitalized for 7 days. That will translate computationally when you're coding into seven records for each person. Say a person is hospitalized twice a year for 7 days. That will be one person translating into 414 records. When you're dealing with 400,000 patients, you don't want to get into that computational methodology issues, because each patient translating into 14 records, 400,000 times 14, I don't even want to do the math. So it's going to be a big data. So in order to accommodate such large-scale data and in order to circumvent this computational issues, what we do is that we adopt a model with piecewise constant baseline rates model. And the computational methodology has been excellently described in Liu's paper. It's Liu and Doug Schaubel and Jack Kavler's paper. So they deal with such issues, and they show us a pathway to deal with such large-scale data. So how do we do this? In model, when we model in stage one, what we do is that we fit a stratified model and with piecewise constant baseline rates, and we stratify it at the facility level. So what we do is that we model it as a function of the covariates or the patient characteristics, but we stratify it at the facility level. This has twofold advantages. One is that it's robust to all possible differences in the patient case mix. Second is that it helps to avoid the bias due to possible confounding between the facility and the patient characteristics. So it allows the baseline event rates to vary across the facilities or the strata, but assumes that the regression coefficients are fixed across all the strata. In the second stage, what we do is that we take the relative risk estimates that we have obtained from the first stage, and we fit a second stage model where we just obtain the overall baseline rate function, and there is no stratification done, no covariates done. So the predicted values from stage one and the baseline from stage two are then calculated or used to calculate the expected number of events. And then we sum it up over all the time periods for over all the patients in the facility to get the expected number of events at the facility level. It might sound a little complicated. I'm not saying it's the easiest of things to do, but it's one of, I would say it's a novel methodology to get around such large-scale data and the kind of work that we are doing. So when we have a parameter estimate and we can calculate the standard error, we can get the z-scores. Now, once we have the z-scores, we feel that these z-scores will be a little more heavy-tailed than a normal distribution, because there are concerns that there are unmeasured event predictors that will make it much more heavy-tailed. And why are we saying unmeasured event predictors? Because we assume that they are not confounders that will affect one facility more than the other. So, and what happens if they are not like normal distribution? There is a fear that we will be artificially flagging more centers. As I want to reiterate, the main intention is to estimate the center effects and make sure that we flag the facilities that we can identify who are performing better or worse than expected. So we don't want to artificially flag facilities. So in order to overcome the possible overdispersion of data, we have a way around. So, and this fact that there is extra variation in the z-scores in the context of profiling medical providers has been well documented by Efron and Spriggletter in 2012 paper. So what we do is that we fit a robust regression on the z-scores and we calculate what is called the normal empirical null distribution. And we use the empirical null distribution to calculate the p-value for classifying facility performance. So that is basically the A to Z of the statistical methodology that we talked about and we developed. Now how do I apply it? So we apply it in the case of monitoring red blood cell transfusions by dialysis providers. And why transfusion? The reason is that there has been some recent policy and regulatory changes that have led to believe, or that has led us to think that there may be some inappropriate transfusions that is going on. Why? Because some of the anemia management drugs have now come under bundled payment system, whereas previously they were paid separately. And also there are some safety concerns associated with aggressive drug use. So this has led us to be concerned that there could be underutilization of drugs and with lower achieved hemoglobins. And this might increase the frequency of the red blood cell transfusions, where the facilities might be using transfusions to unnecessarily treat anemia. So this standardized transfusion ratio, or STRR as we call it, was developed using Medicare claims data. It's a facility level measure, and it is the ratio of observed transfusions to the number of expected transfusions after accounting for the patient case mix. Now, here's one word that I would like you to note. It's the eligible red blood cell transfusions, and I'll explain what it means. So going by how we develop this STRR methods, first we attribute the patients to a particular facility based on some established algorithms, and I can go in details on that, but for the interest of time, I'll skip that. Second is that we divide the periods of follow-up time into 6 periods, and this is clinically decided. Third thing is that eligible transfusions. What are eligible transfusions? So are those that who do not have any claims pertaining to comorbidities identified for exclusion. What does that mean? Okay. So that means that there are some comorbidities that, like hemolytic or aplastic anemia or cancer or sickle cell disease, etc., who have a higher risk of transfusion, and they require a different anemia management practice that this measure is not intended to address. So it's almost like if a patient comes in with a cancer and they need a transfusion, you can't hold the facility responsible for giving him a transfusion because that is a needed transfusion. That is not something the facility could have done without giving it. So we just want to make sure that we are not going against the facility for giving a appropriate transfusion. So what we do is that we modify the patient's risk window to at least have 1 year free of any claims that contain diagnosis on the exclusion list, so that we only count the eligible transfusions in our calculation. So in the risk adjustment, what do? The patient characteristics that are included in model stage one are age, cause of ESRD, duration of ESRD, and by ESRD I mean the amount of time they are on dialysis, and certain other variables like nursing home status, of comorbidity index, etc. And we also include some, beside main effects, we also include some two-way interaction terms based on their clinical and statistical significance. So let me take a backseat and let the numbers speak for themselves. This is some basic raw results, STRR results, and this is for years 2008 to 2011. And as you can see, that the number of facilities are of pretty high, of 6,000, and number of patients is also large, of in the order of 400,000. And total transfusions are increasing a little bit, but then if you look at the raw transfusions rates per patient month, it's not that different from the previous years. And if you look into the distribution, this is how the box plot looks like. And the mean is hovering around 1, the median is slightly below 1, and it looks pretty similar to all the years. My next slide is my favorite one, where we show like how the flagging has been done. Now this is a cross tab between the normal distribution and the empirical null distribution, and as you can see that with using empirical null distribution, we are flagging 4% of the facilities as being worse than expected. Whereas had we used the normal distribution, we would have been flagging some 200 extra. So this kind of gives us the assurance that probably we are doing the right thing. And going forward, as I spoke in the beginning of the presentation, I said that we need statistically valid and reliable measures. Now, how do I test for reliability, or how do I know that the measure that I've come up is actually a good one? So there are different ways we have tested that. Number one is that we have tested the intertemporal correlationship. So that is like we have tested the STRR measure, we have developed it for 4 years, and we have tested how it is changing over the years. And so we have seen that the value ranges from about 0.4 to 0.42, which is not very high, but it's at least consistent that saying that the facilities with higher or lower transfusion rates in 1 year tend to have a higher or lower transfusion rates in the next year too, in the following year. And also we have calculated the inter-unit reliability, which measures the proportion of variation that we can attribute to between facility variants. And this, what is called the IUR, ranges from 0.54 to 0.67, which means like a 0.54 IUR means 54% of the variation is because of the between facility variance, and the 46 is because of the within facility variance. And it indicates a moderate degree of reliability. How do we know that these measures are valid? First of all, there was a technical expert panel that had convened in Baltimore in May 2012, and the expert panel consisted of researchers, clinicians, nurses, patients, and it was a group, and they all unanimously agreed that an introduction or a development of such kind of measure is very, very crucial, especially in light of the recent policy changes that have taken place. So this has face validity. Secondly, also, we measured the measure's correlation with other quality measures, like with hospitalization ratio, and we have a R of 0.42, which means that people with or facilities where transfusion rates are higher, they also have a higher hospitalization ratio. They tend to be hospitalized more, their patients. Secondly, with mortality ratio, then average hemoglobin value. So it's obviously it's a negative relationship. If your hemoglobin is low, then you're at a higher risk of getting transfused. Then percent of patients with hemoglobin less than 10, catheter use, and then we also tested with fistula use, etc. So we tested this measure with all other established qualities of care that is already there in place, and we saw that it is doing a good job. So my summary and concluding slides are the statistical method that we have developed here is a novel methodology because it helps to handle large-scale data, as we talked about. Secondly, it generates unbiased estimates of the coefficients, and then it helps to handle rare and recurrent events. And most importantly, it accounts for the overdispersion at the provider level because of the empirical null distribution that I just showed. And the statistical methods described here have been implemented successfully in practice. One, because it has already been used. This measure is already up on the website, and it is used for public reporting in the Dialysis Facility Compare website, which speaks volumes for itself. Second thing is that CMS was kind of impressed with this measure, and they have decided to include it in the ESRD Quality Incentive Program for the payment year 2018. So that is, I would say, like, there is more work to do on this. We can refine this measure, but it's at least a good start. And I've got references, and thank you for your time. If you have any questions. Okay, so here, so let me answer your question a little differently. When I said like a patient is attributed to a facility at, by some established algorithms, we do take care of the fact that if the patient transfers between facilities, what happens? So those, so we haven't looked specifically into that subgroup of patients who are transferring, but we make sure that when there is a rule that if a patient transfers between facility, we wait for 60 days and before we say that this facility is responsible for this patient's anemia management. So, but yeah, to answer your question specifically, we haven't looked into those patients specifically who are transferring between facilities. Sure. Okay, that's great. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, can you say that one more time? Yeah, so the thing is that what you're talking about is the random effects of the mixed mixed model thing. So when we, the fact that we do a two-stage model kind of attempts to do that, because in the first stage we stratify it at the facility level. So we allow the overall rates to vary across the stratum or the facility. And in the second, and then we just estimate the relative risk estimates based only on the patient characteristics. So the two-stage model kind of attempts to do that mixed model. There is also another paper by Jack Kavlish and Bob Wolf, who has shown that for this kind of data, mixed model is not the right approach. Rather, fixed effect is a better approach. The reason is that random effects model tend to be more biased towards the overall provider of average, but we are more interested in identifying the outliers, you know, who are doing better or worse than the expected. So in that case, fixed effect does a better job than the random effects model. Get your point, and that's absolutely correct.
Right.
Thank you so much.